Hey Dreamers, this is Jody Wisenhunt with Magical Mouse Schoolhouse. Keep on dreaming with Dreamers Podcast.
Hey Dreamers, I'm Joe Pardo, and today I'm talking with Vernon Foster II, who is making his dreams come true by bobbing back and forth like he's in a club right now in front of my face, and also by putting a dent in the universe. Thanks for coming on, Vernon.
Yo, Joe, thanks for having me, man. I appreciate being here. Amongst the dreamers.
Yeah, man. I'm glad to have you here. We met back in December down in Orlando, because that's where you're... Are you from Orlando area?
That's correct.
Or South Florida?
Oh, Orlando. Yeah, I reside in Orlando. That's where I grew up.
Oh, okay.
My stomping grounds.
So when I come down in November, we should get together
and
hang out, because I'll be there for like 4 or 5, 6 days or something like that in November, beginning
Perfect.
Of November. So anyway,
Perfect.
Yeah, so... I got to talk to him there in Orlando at a meetup conference, and then I got to spend more time with him over at Podcast Movement back in the end of July, beginning of August,
right,
out in Texas, which was really great. And I hosted, as you listening probably know, I hosted the PMX talks, which were TEDx style talks. They were 10 minutes long, and it was awesome. At one point we had a packed room with people standing in the back.
Right.
Really honored to take over hosting with that with Michelle Talbert. So
shout out to Michelle Talbert, by the way.
Yeah, man. Love her. she's also been on the show, so so anyway, everything was great until Vernon came up and delivered his speech, which was extremely passionate and extremely four-letter word filled. But it was totally worth it, because he just killed it. His style in which he spoke and gave the speech, and can you find it on YouTube?
Yeah, you can actually go, if you go on YouTube and you type in Podpair, that's my channel, you'll see like a little bird, little parrot, and if you, because there's two, I have two channels for some reason, but if you click on the one with the bird and you go to PMX Talk, Vernon Foster at PMX, Podcast Movement 2015, it's right there.
Well, I will have to put that in the show notes, the talk, but hopefully I can put the audio in here.
Yeah, I filmed it on the GoPro, so I think it came out pretty good because the room was pretty small. It wasn't like a big room, but in the video, I look like I'm like 3 feet tall. So,
well, so you get that effect with the wide, the ultra wide angle. So,
right.
It's no big deal. It's not lost. The message that you delivered, which was talking about the story of how Mike Tyson lost his first match, right?
Right. Yeah, it was February, I think it was like February 2nd, 1990, Tokyo, Japan, land of the rising sun. And James Buster Douglas was fighting Iron Mike Tyson. He was the heavyweight champion of the world at that time, Mike Tyson. He was undefeated. I believe he was like 27-0. And James Buster Douglas had basically all the cards stacked against him. His mother had died unexpectedly at the age of 47 with cancer. And I think it was cancer, maybe it wasn't. And then a couple weeks before the fight, his wife got diagnosed with potentially severe kidney disease, life-threatening kidney infection. And I think it was like 2 years prior, James Buster Douglas got knocked out by Tony Tucker by TKO in the same fight. So on paper, it was, it was just a wrap. Like it was a wash. It was actually billed the one of the greatest upsets in sports history, because James Buster Douglas got knocked. He actually got almost knocked out. I think it was in the sixth round or the seventh round. Maybe it was the sixth round. He got knocked down by Mike Tyson. Mike Tyson landed this menacing uppercut, and he hit the canvas, and Buster Douglas got up as the official was saying 9 in the 10 count, and then he came back to knock Mike Tyson out in the eighth round, and that was the end of it.
Well, I think you said it better when you delivered the speech.
Yeah, it was a lot more emotion, you know. Tokyo, Japan, land of the rising sun. James Buster Douglas versus Iron Mike Tyson, you know. I gave the whole locker room speech, you know. It's with an actual towel. Right, I came out with a towel over my head. I look at it as speaking is a performance, man. Like it's just like when you get behind this mic, you know, you have a duty to captivate people, to bring them in, to get them to really understand that message, right? Like if I would have just stood up there and gave that same talk how I just told you, it wouldn't have been as captivating, right? But it's, you know, practicing. You know, I wrote that entire speech out. I practice it like eight to ten times, I think, before I got in this mind state where I went up to my room and I was kind of like, it was like a pregame. Did you play sports growing up?
When I was young, yeah. Once I got to middle school, it was all about video games.
It's all about video games. Computer games specifically. You know, in sports, you know, you're in the locker room and you're kind of bobbing back and forth. You know, like you were saying in the beginning of the interview, I'm bobbing back and forth. You're getting in that zone, you know. So it was a little bit of that too. But yeah, man, I was proud of that speech. It took a lot, and it came from, I think more importantly, it came the story of where it originated. You know.
Hmm. It was so passionate, and I hope that people are able to listen to it, and I'm sure they will. I'm probably gonna end up cutting all this out, this whole section, just play the clip. But let's get into some of your background, because you started out as a promoter for like nightclubs and raves, right?
Right, right. I used to do raves, actually not that long ago. In 2011, I left my job as a real estate leasing agent to pursue my dream as becoming a world famous DJ and touring the world. underground version of David Guetta, I'd like to think, or at least I thought then. And, you know, I didn't really have, I looked down at the end of the hall and, you know, I saw the guys down at the end of the hall and I asked myself this one question, and it was, you know, would I be able to live with myself 40 years from now when my kids are asking for Lucky Charms and to put on cartoons, you know, knowing that I could have lived out my dream, you know, if I, you know, took the chance? And would I be able to live with regret? And if the answer to that question was no, then I needed to leave immediately. So I actually, you know, I ended up leaving that job. And then I went into, you know, putting together events because, you know, I was like, well, no one's going to let me DJ in Orlando, so I'll just throw my own parties. So we started throwing our own parties. And the first one we did in February 2nd of 2012, we had a packed show, sold out, 1,500 people without a headliner. It was all, you know, streets with the flyers. We had a team. A couple of the universities around here, UCF, Valencia, and then I had like two other partners that were inaugural in making that happen. So that was kind of the whole, you know, event promoter lifestyle. And the funny thing about it is that I got into it to DJ more, and I ended up DJing less. So yeah, it was fun, but at the same time, I ended up getting myself into a situation where I was drinking a lot. There was a lot of partying involved. I mean, there was drugs involved, and it was a road that was really going nowhere fast. And I kind of felt stuck, and podcasting was, you know, kind of my way out from that lifestyle.
Wow. Well, so that's good that you got out of that, because generally that does, you know, play a part, the drugs and the alcohol and the partying and when does it ever stop? And
right.
So it is actually a good thing that you since you weren't able to control yourself in that situation, it's good that you were able to get yourself out of that situation.
Right, right.
Not that it's not, you know, tempting and all that. I just saying, you know, it's a good thing. It's a good thing that you're able to move on from it. So anyway, so you got into podcasting like so many of us that have been on the show. And now you're running PodParrot, where you're helping companies, small businesses, develop their own podcasts.
Right, right. Yeah, we so in terms of like the podcasting, how I kind of ended up here was that I actually launched my first podcast in 2013. And I saw this guy named Andrew Warner. Do you know who Andrew Warner is? Mixergy? Have you ever heard of him? No.
Well, I think I've heard his name thrown around, but I don't think I've met him.
Well, I saw him and I was like, oh, this guy's just sitting in front of a camera with a microphone. Like, I do this at parties, you know, like I could do this all day, you know, coming from a DJ. So you know this, Joe, like coming from the DJ background, like you got to be able to get up and rock the mic. So like this guy was sitting in front of a camera in a studio and I was like, oh, I got this all day, baby. So I launched a video podcast. I think it was called like Live by the Beat or something. And I was interviewing DJs to have them tell their story about like how do you make it in the DJ game? And then like also music industry, like people, like how to make it in the music industry. And that bombed. It lasted like two months, or maybe it was 2 weeks. I don't know, but it bombed. And I didn't have any kind of strategy in place. I didn't have any kind of business on the back end. And then I kind of got discouraged. And then I ran into a friend of mine named Lo Silva. He was a good friend and mentor, and he was like, hey man, why don't you keep doing this podcasting thing? I keep hearing about it. Like, I think it's got some legs. And I was like, well, I don't know what to podcast about. And he was like, you do events, right? Talk about events. And I was like, oh, well, you think people will listen? And he was like, yeah, you know, everybody needs events. So I started recording my, my backlog, right? You know, and I got up to, I started in December of that same year. And I got up to like 22 interviews. I launched in February of 2014. And then I was like, oh man, I see this guy named John Lee Dumas and he's killing it, bro. Like, I'm going to go daily. So I started to do a daily show and that just unraveled. And, but what was cool about that is that I saw, hey, this isn't a one man show. And I realized that this was a business. And then I started helping some other people that needed help. And then PodParrot was born. You know, it was born out of my frustration and struggle trying to do it all myself. And I realized that if this is me, you know, and you know, this is what I'm struggling with, imagine if, you know, somebody else, you know, has a business and they have a family or they're doing all these other things, they're not going to have time to podcast, right? So it started with just podcasters, and then it eventually evolved into professionals, companies, and startups who we work with now.
Yeah, well, I think that's a good strategy because companies have money to spend on things that bring in customers versus,
right, right.
You know, Joe Nobody wants to start a podcast and doesn't want to spend a lot of money. And you're like, hey, come on, spend some money with me. It'd be fun. It'd be great. It'd be an adventure. And he's like, well, I really am not allowed to spend any extra money, you know.
Right, like how can I do it on $10 a month?
It's like, yes, and nah. You're like, oh man, how many customers do I got to get at $10 a month to be
yeah,
able
that's,
to eat?
That's not; those aren't my ideal clients.
There's one trip to Chipotle, man. I mean, come on.
But those people can read the blogs, and you know, like I got respect for anybody that sets out on this path. You know, it's not an easy one. Like with the success that you have had, Joe, and with the book, and like it's not easy, man. And I think a lot of people see this and they're like, oh, well, I can, like me when I saw Andrew Warner, I was like, oh, I can do that, I got this, and I failed miserably. it takes a lot of work, man. It's not an easy thing at all, but it's rewarding. It can be. I mean, you're seeing the fruits of your labor from the show, you know, now, and so it's definitely rewarding, but it's not for the faint at heart. And yeah, it takes work.
Yeah, you know, a lot of times your payment is experiences, getting to experience things that you wouldn't get to experience otherwise. And it's not just, you know, experiences in the way of interviews, but like getting to go places, getting to meet people,
right, and getting
to meet more people, like not just like people, like key players, but just people in general. Like that's, you know, that's something to me that's always important. Like I could go to another country and not even go see sites as long as I could go and chill with a bunch of different people and just hang out and like have great conversation.
Right, right.
To me, that's like meeting the people is the sightseeing. That's what I want to do. So for me, it just makes like perfect sense to be able to connect with people like you and everybody else that's been on the show and the people that I've gotten to meet because of the show and everything. So it
just works. That's I mean, and everything that I've never, I mean, I'm not like, I was never like a straight A student, right? Like,
yeah, me neither.
All of the opportunities that have come into my life have been from the people I've had relationships with and known, and those opportunities have come my way, or they've introduced me into other people. So that's probably one of the, you know, like more than anything, more than trying to make $60,000 in sponsorship a month, you know, like the relationships that you're going to build with people over the next 10, 15, however long you know, you keep doing this, that's more important than any dollar amount, because who knows where those people will be. They may hire you to be the CEO of their company one day. They may ask you to do their podcast one day when they join their Fortune 500 company or whatever. You know, you just never know where people are going to be. So it's important to authentically cultivate those relationships, you know?
Oh yeah. I couldn't agree more. I mean, you don't know who they are, who they know, and you know what they know, and how you can help each other. And I mean, even in times when it's just, they just need a warm body, you know, like I just need somebody to like, I was just telling to my friend Rich, and he was like, yeah, he's like, I helped this guy, you know, shovel snow. And it turns out that the guy that helped shovel snow out, like to get his car out of a drift, was somebody who I became friends with and has hooked me up with a lot of gigs. You know, he's like, I didn't know. He's like, I just wanted to help somebody. And and then we got to talking. So, you know, you never know. And that's what being friendly, doing things for people that you don't necessarily want to do. Because, you know, how many people want to shovel snow? I mean, you obviously don't. You live in Florida.
I don't know what that means. I don't know what snow is, man. The snow we have here is like when they build those little mini ice skating rings in December and they put the little tarp over it and they put this like little blow machine with the fake snow. That's the snow that we have. And you don't have to shovel that.
No, I hear you, man. But yeah, just getting to know people and obviously authentically and, doing you and being you, right?
Right.
Because not everyone's going to be for you, and not everyone, you know, and you're not going to be for everyone. So it's important that like, if you put your best foot forward, but you do it in a sense that's it's you putting your foot forward, not the best representation of what you think the person that you're trying to talk to wants to see, you're going to be in a lot better position to be able to maintain that because it's you doing it, not some imaginary person.
Right, right. And, you're not faking the funk.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's easy to fake once, but then, you know, over time, it just...
It's like, exhausting.
Yeah, it is. It's more work to do that than to just find, you know, 10 people that actually like who you are.
Right, right.
Then to keep making it up and playing a part. So I think that the power of networking and getting out and talking to people and just, you know, I mean, I love it. I, you know, do it all the time. Now, with that said, I'll take that $60,000 sponsorship. Maybe if I like the product, I like the people, and I feel like it's a good deal and I feel like it's a good fit for my audience. Hey, you know, it's a win-win-win-win-win, or however
right.
wins we need to make it
and
good.
And I'll take it too, or split it with you. I mean, don't get me wrong. I'm not saying I don't like money, but I'm just saying that people need to have the right intentions for getting into. And if you want to do sponsorship, that's cool. But just understand that you're not going to be a John Lee Dumas. You know, you're not. He's able to do that because he cranks. You know, he does volume. And maybe you'll get there one day, but like I don't know. Maybe I shouldn't even say that because this is the Dreamers podcast, and I'm bashing people's dreams. You know what I'm saying? Like, if that's what you want to do, baby, go do it. I support you 100%. Just be willing to put in the work if that's what you want, right?
Like, yes.
Don't think that you can hop in this and do it for 6 months and you're going to be rich.
Yeah, no. I mean, it's not. That's not always the case, right? And I think being authentic about everything that you do really shines through, especially when you're talking about, like, wow, do I want to do a show 7 days a week? And I'm making $0 6 months in, 8 months in, 9 months in, 10 months in, a year and a half in. Like, right. You're making a little bit of money, but you're putting out an incredible amount of work, time and effort, and hoping that it catches on fire. Now, you know, there's a little pun there, but
and being kind of going back to that, being your authentic self. Like, if somebody's already doing something, it's not cool anymore. Right. Like the reason why people caught on to what you're doing, Joe, is because you're talking about dreams and you're doing it your way. And like, that's cool. Like, people think that that's dope and they like that. Right. But if somebody comes and tries to rip your show and do the same thing, it's kind of gimmicky. Like, you're kind of ripping off your creativity. Like, not to say that you can't steal like an artist, but like, do you, man? Like, this is one of the most. I love this medium because you can be yourself and people will fucking love you for it. Like,
great. Now I got to bleep that. Thanks, man.
Sorry,
I appreciate
sorry,
it.
Sorry, sorry, sorry. You got to bleep
it. It's a family show here.
It's a family show. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I'm just being my authentic self, baby.
No, I know. But sometimes there's a time and place
for certain
four-letter words. But that's okay. It's okay. So
we can edit that out.
Yes. Yes. It's like so far the only edit that I really had to make here. But so thank you for that. You know, Vernon, I think that it has a lot to do with people resonating with who you are and what you're doing and the message and the why that you do it and all that. So, yeah, I mean, there's Dave Jackson of School Podcasting. We were so fortunate to have him come out to
OG.
Yeah, man, he is an OG, and he came out to the podcast Mid-Atlantic or Mid-Atlantic Podcast Conference here in South Jersey that I was hosting this past weekend, and he did a whole thing about creativity and originality and how pretty much nothing was original, and you just have to take what's out there. You're pretty much going to wind up just taking what's out there in some form or fashion and making it your own, and if right. you don't make it your own, well, then you're just like the ripoff, you know, you're the, you got the Transformers, then you got the, what's it called? Bots, the, not Autobots. It was a joke from Clerks too. Being like the imitation.
Right. Right.
You know,
knockoff.
Yeah. Yeah. And you don't want to be a knockoff, but it was funny cause he talked about John Lee Dumas and all the on fires that there are out there because
right.
they're all trying to be like, oh, well, if he's making it like that, then I can make it like that too. And I'll just copy the on fire, you know,
right.
Salesman on
Grant,
fire.
That's great for John. He's loving that.
yeah. I mean, it is right. Cause that's like one of the biggest forms of flattery is
like,
imitation.
Yo, you copying my stuff. Cool, man.
Yeah. Yeah.
Means
yeah.
I'm doing something right, baby.
It does. And you know what? At the end of the day, he's still making a boatload of cash every month. So
right.
It wouldn't be bothering me all that much. So, you know, the only times that I think it would bother somebody is if like, oh, these people are copying me and I'm not getting any kind of thing to make me say, that's okay. Let them copy.
Right. Right.
You know, so. Vernon, what's been the biggest roadblock for you with PodParrot?
I think just when I initially started kind of sifting and sorting and finding the right people, because I don't think this is a medium for everybody, right? Like, some people are like, everybody should start a podcast. I don't really believe that. And also kind of finding a balance between the people that I can serve and it provides the most value to, and that they're willing to pay. a premium for, because I don't really believe in like low budget, you know, bottom of the barrel. Like everything that like I do, I try to do the best of my abilities. And our team, you know, we try to do everything to the best of our abilities. And I believe that when you can charge a little bit more, then you can provide more value versus, you know, being kind of a low dollar Walmart. You know, like, you know, think about the shopping experience when you go to Walmart. You know, it's not that, depending on if you're, it's a neighborhood market or something. But and I know down here in Florida, we have like Whole Foods. They have like Trader Joe's. Like it's a completely different experience. And, you know, I think when I first set out with this, like I was targeting people that just kind of, I think they really just didn't understand the power of the medium. So it was like, well, I only want to pay, you know, X amount of dollars and that's it. But it's like when you look at the long-term value of this, the ROI on what it can do for your life, other people's lives, you know, reaching the world, you know, like you can have listeners in China, you know, who've never met you and they can get your message and they can change their lives, right? Like there's people that are listening to this podcast, Joe, that you've never met, and it's impacted their lives in more ways than you can believe. So like, what's the value on that? Like it's almost priceless, right? Like it's, we almost can't really quantify it because we haven't even began to see the impact that it will have. Because it's so, I mean, this, we're just in the, you know, in the pioneering phase of podcasting. So I think that was a struggle for me because it was like, how do I find the right people that have a good message and that this works for, and that it will be, I can still, you know, put food on my table and feed myself and take care of the things that I need to take care of. So I think that was a recent struggle with me, and it's always changing, right? Like I think the only, what do they say? The only constant is change, right? So if we get, I always say, if you get stuck in a position and you're always thinking the same way or you're always doing the same things, then you're not growing. There's no room for growth there. But if you set this, if you go out and you have a goal or you have, you know, a vision of where you want to be and you say, okay, this is where I want to be or this is what I want to create, and I'm flexible, right? Like I'm not so fixated on the outcome as I am fixated on the process, then you will give yourself the ability to be able to grow and to shift and move like water. So for me, I think at the outset it was, hey, it has to be this way. This is what it's going to be. And then I had to shift my mindset to say, all right, these may not be the people that you're supposed to be working with. These may not be the people that are a good fit for your vision and where you want to take this, or the people's, you know, the messages that you want to put out there in the world or help support.
And that's sometimes a difficult thing to do because the, you know, low hanging fruit is the person right in front of you.
Right. Right.
You know, it's difficult to be like, okay, I'm going to walk away from this and I'm going to go get somebody else that really is passionate about it. And yeah, I would say that the ROI is difficult, but in that, you know, it's just like any marketing really. Right. Unless you're talking about direct, like, hey, I gave you a coupon, you show up and pay with coupon. It's really hard. It's intangible because of the fact that, like if you spend all that money on like a Super Bowl commercial, right? Sure. Everyone's going to watch it, but does that mean you're going to go buy more Pepsi?
No, probably not
really, but it keeps your name in front of you.
Right, right.
You know, and maybe, you know, like a younger generation might be swayed, you know, by that, maybe. Right. But I would think by and large, it's like pretty much it's a decision that's like whatever it is. It's, you know, because whatever's on sale this week, you know, at the supermarket is probably what's getting picked up more of.
Right. And this is more intimate than that, right? Like,
exactly. It's all what you make out of it, right? Because if you just make a show where you're just putting out information, well, then a blog might be better for you if you don't want that interaction with the audience as much.
Right, right.
Whereas here you could, you know, get the audio recordings and you can, you know, or video if you want to do a video side of it and do all that with it. So it can be way more intimate, and really intimate is, you know, there's no better selling machine than being intimate with your audience.
Well, I think that's the way sales are shifting, right? Like, we don't just buy to buy anymore. We're becoming, you know, more conscious consumers, and we vote with our dollar. And it's like, hey, I'm not just going to buy. Like, look at people, like the shift from, you know, people buying organic stuff. Like, you used to just go to the market and buy meat. Now it's like, oh, it's gotta be organic, you know, or, you know, it's gotta be locally grown, or, you know, just people are, whether that's what you do or not, that's just the way people's buying habits are shifting. They want to know the source of where the information is coming from. They want to know that you're a real person on the other side of the phone. They don't want to talk to a freaking call center, you know? They want to feel that interaction with the person that they're buying from, so they know that they're real if they're going to be spending their money.
Yeah, couldn't agree more. You got to know when to give automation and when not to give automation. And a blog could be spit out by any, you know, a blog, like a post of text could be spit out by anybody.
Right.
So it's really all about the person and the voice, and the voice gives authenticity, and it gives the ability for people to realize that it's a real person.
Absolutely.
Vernon, growing up, what was your childhood dream?
Man, I'd say to be a professional athlete. That didn't work out too well because I'm pretty short. And
what sport?
Football.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah, short guys have a you know, career in football.
I didn't have any vertical though, man. I didn't have a vertical. I couldn't jump. I weighed like 150. Well, probably back then like 130. But yeah, man, I played football my whole life. Probably I started playing when I was maybe like 8 or 9. Flag football, however old you are, and I played all the way up through high school, my senior year. But yeah, that was my dream, and then it shifted because after that I kind of went on this journey of what do I do now? Been playing football all my life. I didn't get picked up by Florida State, you know, and the Redskins aren't trying to recruit me. So I found music, and then it was to be this world famous touring DJ, you know. Which we have, you know, commonality with that, being playing music. And it's funny because I set out to leave my job to pursue DJing, and it kind of shifted, and now it's podcasting. So it's interesting, man. It's interesting that we set out on a path and we may not end up where we projected. And for me, that's okay. I think I used to be a little fixated on attached to, hey, it has to be like this. I got to be in the NFL or I'm a loser, you know? But then, you know, you start to realize that, hey, maybe your calling is a little different, or, you know, you're able to be malleable and shift, you know, a little bit. And the DJing thing, I don't think that's done. I think I'll go back to that. Eventually, I actually DJed a wedding in Austin 2 weeks ago, and that was pretty fun.
It's fun. You flew all the way to Austin?
My buddy flew me out there. Oh, yeah, he flew me out. We were in a hip hop group together, and he flew me out to DJ his wedding. He was like, "If I'm gonna have anybody DJ my wedding, it's gonna be DJ Vinyl V."
So
I was out in Austin, and it's a great feeling, man. You know that feeling when you're behind the decks and you're just rocking the party and everyone's like, oh, go Joe. What's your DJ name?
DJ Rom.
DJ Rom.
Yeah, man.
Yo, DJ Rom, play that track.
Yeah, it's been a few years, man. It's been a few years since I've played that. Because it takes, you know, it takes a lot of time and effort. You got to pack up the gear, and you got to you get there like an hour too early, and set then you're the last one to leave, and it's like, and how many times, you know, did I do it for like next to nothing?
Right, same.
Money-wise, you know? Or we pass the tip jar around and like, hey, drop, you know, everybody drop in a buck or two. And it's like, woohoo, I made 30 bucks. Yeah, well, the cops showed up and I'm glad they didn't confiscate my gear because no one was supposed to be where we were and that kind of stuff. So, you know, it's like, what's the risk reward type thing? Yeah, okay. It's there's the potential there, but burning the candle at both ends when you have a job, you know, the day job is it gets tough after a while. So
agreed.
And you know what the other thing is for me, DJing is pretty much almost always been about playing the music that I wanted to play and not playing what everybody wanted me to play. And how and specifically how, because I do mashups and stuff like that. So for me, it's like I want to do the. For me, it's an art, right?
Right.
And that's like, you know, I could go do the wedding thing. I could do all that, like, but and I could still go do it. I have more than enough equipment to go do plenty of weddings and all that crap. But
right.
For me, it's all about just the art of it, you know.
Agreed, brother.
That's where Adventuratorium, my first album, came from, and that's it. And it's hard for some people to understand, like, oh man, you're supposed to be out there DJing. You're supposed to be like doing the weddings and doing the parties and making a couple hundred bucks here, a couple hundred bucks there, and, you know, making it a career if that's what you really want to do. But to me, it's just, nah, man, you know, it's just, I'd rather do the art stuff.
Right. Right.
Put it out into the world.
I agree. That's how I started. So like when I first started DJing, I was a scratch DJ, and I used to take the record. I'd take a drum, a snare, a kick, and a hi-hat. And I'd make a beat like with the fader.
Yeah,
and I saw these guys like Q-Bert, Invisible Scratch Pickles, Executioners. They were up in New York, New Jersey area where you're from. And then like the world famous Beat Junkies on the West Coast. Yeah. And I was like, oh man, these guys are taking a record and they're like, they're making like music out of it. So I'm right there with you, man.
Yeah, no, that C2C is another from France. They're another one I really love. But, you know, there isn't a lot of money in that. Like, no. And I don't, it's not about, again, it's not about the money, but like, yo, you gotta eat, you gotta have somewhere to live and, you know, all that.
Maslow's hierarchy of needs, baby.
So anyway, Vernon, I would love for you to share what your dreams for the future look like.
Oh, man, for me or for the world or what? For me? Oh, okay. I think for my taking my business to another level and being able to help, you know, more companies and brands, I think that I feel like podcasting is blowing up because it's reintroducing humanity back into the algorithm. So helping more people, more companies align with their customers through this medium, traveling more. For sure, that's something that I've you know, over the last couple of years, I've really fell into, and I believe that it helps me kind of see the world from a different perspective. It helps me gain insight on my culture and other cultures, and just be more of a citizen of the world. And I think finally, just helping more people, just giving more as I excel more, finding ways to give back more of my time, more of myself to people in, you know, communities that may not be as privileged as I was growing up, or and doing that in a way where it empowers people and it makes them self-reliant versus, you know, because I think a lot of the problems that we have are we give people instead of empowering them. But when you empower somebody, you enable them to be self-reliant. And when you do that, that's when you see real change in the world.
That's beautiful, man.
Thanks, man.
Is there any last thoughts you'd like to share?
Last thoughts, man. Never let anybody tell you that you can't have your dream. Protect it at all costs. I don't care if it's your family. I don't care if it's your cousins. I don't care if it's your girlfriend. I don't care if it's your wife. Because at the end of the day, you know, when you're on your deathbed, you know, that may sound a little morbid, you're going to be the only one that has to answer to yourself. There's actually a nurse did a speech on this. It's called The Seven Laws of Paradise Island. There's a nurse in Australia. Her name was Bonnie Ware, and she was a nurse to the dying. And she wrote a memoir entitled The Top Five Regrets of the Dying. And the number one regret that those people had, the number one thing that they said was that they wished they had lived a life that was true to themselves instead of a life that others expected of them. So, you know, take that as you may, and just keep that in the back of your mind whenever you're thinking about giving up or giving in, because you're going to get knocked down. It's going to happen, baby. But it's about how you get up that matters.
Definitely. Definitely. And how many times you can get up and keep pushing forward. Because there's somebody out there that definitely wants you to succeed. And it's more than just you. And sometimes you need to find that person and latch on to their positivity and their belief in you. Because sometimes during this course, we don't always... we don't always know how to keep moving forward and keep right. getting back up, because it seems futile. Vernon, I really appreciate you being on the show today. I would love for you to share how people can connect with you.
Yeah, well, me personally, you can hit me up on... I'm a big fan of Instagram, man. I'm a big fan of Instagram. I like Instagram. So that's Vernon _Foster, like the beers, but I don't get royalties. And then at Vernon Foster on Twitter, if you're a Twitter person, a tweeter, if you want to connect with me personally, Facebook as well. That's just Vernon T. Foster II. So that's where you can find me. If you want to learn more about PodParrot, PodParrot.com.
Awesome. I will have those in the show notes, as well as the YouTube video with your awesome speech from Podcast Movement.
Thanks for having me, man. I appreciate you thinking about me, Joe. And, this pot, your success, you know, is a testimony to this medium and what it can do for people's lives. So congrats on what you're doing, brother, and keep the dream alive.
Well, thank you, man. I appreciate it. I mean, success comes in a lot of different flavors, and I'm hoping to try them all very soon.
like Baskin Robbins, baby. 31 yeah. flavors.
Well, apparently they have more than 32 flavors. They have, like, I don't know, a couple hundred.
Really?
Yeah. I happened to be watching Kelly and Michael live. Like, right. I don't know. It was just a random morning that I happened to be watching TV. And they had mentioned that there was, like, I don't know, over 100 flavors or something like that. So it wasn't 32 flavors. They just rotate them out. But thanks again, Vernon. I really appreciate the kind words and everything. And please keep doing what you're doing, man, because you're definitely an inspiration to the people that you're surrounded by.
You as well, my friend. You as well.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of the Dreamers Podcast. Follow us on Twitter @DreamersPodcast. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/DreamersPodcast. If you or someone you know would like to be a guest on the Dreamers Podcast, please send an email to j@jpar.co. This podcast is copyright 2014 by jpar.co.